This is the Whole Hog Sports Football Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, featuring interviews, analysis, and feature stories on Arkansas football. Now, from Fayetteville, here's your host, Seth Campbell.
While the Razorbacks have played football in the SEC since 1992, when it comes to Kentucky, they might as well be in a different conference. The Hogs and Cats have had some dazzling matchups on the hardwood.
Matt, for maybe the win. The ball is good! Arkansas in overtime!
But when it comes to the gridiron, the teams have only met seven times. Kentucky holds the series advantage 4-3, and coming off a bye week, they want to make a push for the postseason. Meanwhile, the Hogs are searching for their first SEC win under Chad Morris and are traveling to the Bluegrass State for the first time since 2008. With great games in the past,
he lost it! And Arkansas, Tony Bua comes away with it, and Arkansas comes away with the win in seven overtimes.
This game could settle the trajectory for both schools this season. From Whole Hog Sports, I'm Seth Campbell, and this is the Whole Hog Football Podcast. On today's show, we'll talk about the Hogs getting healthy and doing some studying during the bye week. We'll also talk to Mark Story, writer for the Lexington Herald Leader. Then, we'll wrap it up with the most experienced Razorback Roundtable out there, as Tom Murphy, Bob Holt, and Scotty Bordelon discuss the bye week and the Hogs game against Kentucky. But first, a word from our sponsor, Massage Envy. Massage Envy, voted the top day spa in all of Northwest Arkansas, now is even better with the addition of Jammarini and Obagi skincare services and products. These exciting new lines are provided, as well as a serum-infused microdermabrasion and chemical peels. Our face is one of the most important features that we have. Proper skincare services and products will enhance and protect your face, while the benefits, well, they could extend a lifetime. No matter your gender, come by either clinic in Rogers or Fayetteville today for your introductory session. Oh, the bye week. A great time to catch up on football, get some sleep, or, if you're one of the unfortunate souls, go to a fall wedding.
Stop it. Get some help.
While the Hogs football team may not have seen anybody tie the knot, they did want to work some out by getting some players healthy last week.
Now, we had an opportunity to get some guys back healthy this past week during our open week.
Nick Starkle, Trey Knox, Traylon Burks, Devion Warren, and Jordan Jones have all missed time in games because of injury, and that's just on the offensive side of the ball. On the defensive side, Jamario Bell and Zach Williams have missed time, but they are expected to be back for the Kentucky game. That's just guys that have missed time, though. If you factor in guys that have been banged up, the names like Mike Woods and McTelvin Agim get thrown into the ring as well. All of these injuries can lead to some frustration.
Man, it's amazing how a couple plays, we're sitting here 4-1, and we'd all be laughing and dabbing each other up. Instead, you know, I want to go home and kick my dog, so...
No worries, Fido was not hurt in the making of this podcast. But the Hogs, they were hurt. This is football we're talking about, so injuries happen. That's why when coaches preach about death, that's not just coach speak. But the Hogs did more than just heal over the off week. They also took the opportunity to prepare for one of the more winnable SEC games left on their schedule.
There was a lot of game prep going on last week, especially with Kentucky having an open week and a bye week. There was no more film we were going to get this week that were going to help us out.
While the Hogs and Cats won't be drawing any marquee coverage on Saturday night, this is a big game for both schools. Morris is looking for his first victory over a Power 5 school since he became a head coach, while Mark Stoops and Kentucky are looking to build momentum for a postseason push at the end of the year. To wrap it up in a sentence, can healthy Hogs hamper hungry Cats?
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. One reason is our great therapists and estheticians. Due to increased demand with our new services in both massage and skincare, Massage Envy is now looking for talented, licensed providers to join our great team. A competitive compensation package and family-like environment are just some of the reasons our providers have worked nearly 10 years with Massage Envy. Looking for a great career? Come by our clinics in Rogers or Fayetteville and apply today.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
You know, biggest takeaway from that play would probably just be, you know, don't throw it to the other team.
Yeah.
When you talk about tackling all we want, I shouldn't be having to make a tackle. I shouldn't be making that mistake. And that's on me. That's me, you know, making a bad play worse, in my opinion.
Quarterback Nick Starkel on his interception and injury against Texas A&M in the first half of the Razorbacks' last game. Welcome into the Whole Hog Football Podcast, joined now by Mark Story, writer for the Lexington Herald Leader. And Mark, you know, if you follow college football closely at all, you know the fantastic year that Mark Stoops and the Wildcats had last year. But after losing some key pieces, you know, what were the expectations for this Kentucky team, and have they lived up to them this year?
Well, the expectations were fairly high, maybe a little unrealistically high, but Kentucky, you know, as you said, they lost a lot from last year's team. Especially they lost Benny Snell, the running back, who was, you know, they built their whole attack around. They lost Josh Allen, who was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year and won several National Defensive Player of the Year honors. Rush End, who was really disruptive and really impacted, you know, games in the fourth quarter, just had a knack for making kind of game-deciding or game-altering plays. And then they lost their top five key players in the secondary. They were all seniors. So, you know, that was a lot to lose. But, you know, people were still, I think, optimistic. And part of that was the perception that the schedule was favorable. But Kentucky's had some bad luck. They lost their starting quarterback, Terry Wilson, in the second game. Before the season even began, they lost Devontae Robinson, who was a safety and would have been the best defensive back and was good enough last year that even with all those seniors, by the end of the year, he had worked his way in and was a key player. And they lost him, and he was really important to the defense. Then they lost Wilson in the second game, and then they had brought in a graduate transfer from Troy, a quarterback named Sawyer Smith, who looked really good in the first half against Florida. And then he threw an interception on the first drive of the third quarter and made a great play to run the guy down and make a tackle, but he hurt his wrist. And since then, he just hasn't looked like the same player. So the combination of having both their experienced quarterbacks hurt, and they've had injuries in the one area, the other area they really couldn't afford at the defensive backfield, it hadn't gone especially well the last three games.
The bye week came at a great time on the Arkansas side of it. They were able to get healthy. On the Kentucky side, what was the key focus for Kentucky over this bye week?
Well, everything is dependent on getting Sawyer Smith healthy. You know, after he hurt his wrist against Florida, he started at Mississippi State and did not have a great game. His receivers didn't help him very much. Kentucky dropped like three touchdown passes in that game, or three potential touchdown passes in that game. But he hurt his shoulder there, so then he was playing with an injured wrist and an injured shoulder. And then in the South Carolina game, he just looked bad. I mean, he just looked like he just didn't look like himself. And apparently he suffered some kind of injury to what Mark Stoops called a lower extremity injury. So he entered the bye week with three ailments. And, you know, I think for Kentucky to have any chance to salvage this season, they've got to get him back close to the guy that played in the first half against Florida. So all the focus for Kentucky is, you know, how healthy is he going to be? Is he going to be healthy enough to play, for one thing? And then is he healthy enough to play effectively, which is probably the more important question.
If Sawyer Smith is healthy, and he's right now is the projected starter for Kentucky, but, you know, you never know with how things will go the rest of the week. What does Sawyer Smith do well for the Wildcats?
Well, it's hard to say a little because we've only really seen him, you know, at his best really for one half. But in that half, he was getting the ball out quickly. He throws the deep ball really well. You know, he's not immobile, but he's not a running quarterback in the way Terry Wilson is. You know, he's a pocket passer, and when he was healthy, he had a good arm and he got it out quick and was, you know, looked really good against Florida until the wrist injury.
If Sawyer Smith isn't able to go or is kind of limited, a lot of people are looking at Lynn Bowden, a wide receiver who can also run the Wildcat for the Wildcats. What does he bring to the table?
Well, Lynn's very dynamic. He's a playmaker. The downside of having to use Lynn Bowden at quarterback is you don't have him as a receiver. You know, and he's Kentucky's leading receiver by a large margin. And the other thing, presumably, if you have to use him at quarterback, you can't use him in the return game. And he's leading the SEC in both punts and kickoff returns. So, you know, that you would be risking giving up a lot of kind of, you know, special teams yardage. But, you know, Lynn was a high school quarterback, and he can throw it a little bit. I think if you were using him at quarterback, you would be running an awful lot of read option and doing a lot of stuff off that. And, you know, I'm skeptical over the long run that you can really win playing a wide receiver at quarterback, but I think in a one-game setting, sometimes you can make that work.
You mentioned kind of earlier, you know, last month Kentucky, they came so close to starting their own streak against Florida with two in a row, but they ended up losing 29-21. Now Florida is rolling and Kentucky, you know, can't seem to find their rhythm. You mentioned kind of Sawyer Smith at quarterback was one big key to that, but what else, you know, have the Wildcats, what did they do well against Florida that they haven't done well against Mississippi State or South Carolina?
Well, the run defense against Florida was good. It has not been very good since then. You know, that loss, you know, the game Kentucky had, you know, entered the fourth quarter leading, I think, 21-10 and had a fourth and one in Florida territory and was unable to convert it and just completely, you know, changed the momentum. And Kentucky hasn't seemed really the same team since. And I think a lot of that is the quarterback situation and the fact Sawyer hasn't been the same player. But I think the biggest concern and maybe the biggest surprise to me, Kentucky is very experienced in its defensive front. And it has good linebackers and not great, but good defensive linemen. But the last two games at Mississippi State and at South Carolina, they've given up not one, but 200-yard rushers in both games. And you're not going to win, you know, many SEC football games if, you know, you're allowing your opponent, you know, two guys over 100 yards rushing.
Talking about the defensive line, Kentucky's roster, if when you look at it, they have got two huge nose tackles that weigh over 360 pounds, and Quentin Bohannon and Marquand McCall, pardon me. Have those guys done a good job of clogging up the middle?
Well, Quentin Bohannon is a really and Marquand is a good prospect too, but, you know, a lot of people entered the year thinking Quentin, if he had a good year, Mike could enter the draft. And, you know, Kentucky's really big. You know, their defensive tackle, Calvin Taylor, is like 6'9", 310, and is a good player. He's surprisingly agile for a guy that big. But, you know, coming into the year, the thought was the strength of Kentucky's teams were its lines. Its offensive line is a veteran line. Its defensive line is veteran. You know, and that line played well against Florida. They were able to get pressure on the quarterback. You know, Florida was not able to run the ball especially effectively. But they have, you know, Kentucky, as I said, they've really had a hard time stopping the run since then. And you know, it's hard not to conclude that, you know, the defensive line bears at least some of the responsibility on that.
And then as we wrap it up here, and thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. Last question. You know, Arkansas hasn't played Kentucky since 2012, and they haven't played in Lexington since 2008, which is Bobby Petrino's first year. Do you like the current format of how the SEC schedules cross-division games?
You know, I'm okay with it. I mean, I understand it's kind of that it, you know, like, as you mentioned, some of the East, the teams that aren't in your division, you go a long time before you see them. I mean, Texas A&M isn't scheduled to come to Lexington until 2025. It'll be the first time they play in Lexington since they've joined the SEC. You know, I was on a show here in Lexington, and we got to talking about the Kentucky-Arkansas series. It's been a really, you know, the 2012 game wasn't much of a game, although it is notable that it was stopped in the third quarter by the weather, which you don't see too often in an SEC setting.
Right.
But it's been a really good series. There have been a lot of good games, a lot of interesting games. You know, Kentucky is honoring Jared Lorenzen, who passed away this summer, the former UK quarterback who was the Kentucky quarterback in the 7 overtime game that Arkansas won here in 03. And, you know, one of the best wins for Kentucky in this century was in 2007 when the Andre Woodson-led team, you know, beat Arkansas in Fayetteville when Arkansas was the defending SEC West champion. So, you know, it's been a good series. And you mentioned the game in 08. You know, Bobby Petrino, who is thought of here as the Louisville coach, is not especially popular, and that was the first time Kentucky had ever beaten him. So that was a win that UK fans think fondly of.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much for your insight and for joining us here on the Whole Hog Football Podcast. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Seth.
Massage Envy with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy. Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
It's nice because you usually don't get SEC East opponents. So we finally get another one. We always get Missouri, but we get another one. It's always exciting when you look at the schedule, like what SEC East opponent you're going to get. So we're excited to go into Kentucky.
That's defensive end McTelvin Aguim on getting to play Kentucky this week. Welcome back to the Whole Hog Football Podcast. Seth Campbell now joined alongside Bob Holt, Scotty Bordelon, and Tom Murphy. And we're going to do a little bit of a roundtable, gentlemen. The Razorbacks, well, it seemed like the bye week couldn't have come at a better time for them. They were able to make sure Starkle is healthy, get the receiving core back to full strength. So we'll start with you, Tom. Who or what do you think was the biggest bye week key for the Hawks?
Well, getting the health back probably was the biggest thing. And I just being cleaner with their execution, because if there's a couple of formation things they've done in some games that have been costly to them. In the Ole Miss game, I know, and in this last game, Burks was not an eligible receiver when he caught that pass that went for 50 yards. So they need to clean those things up. And I think having a completely or almost completely healthy receiving core will add to that, with probably getting Jordan Jones back, but getting Knox to team with Woods and Burks for a really good first unit there, and then getting Mike Woods back with his hip issue. So I would say being healthy and kind of mentally refreshed is a big deal for him.
What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, I think the injuries, especially, you know, Ty Clary, their starting center, was in concussion protocol. It's pretty hard, I would think, to come back from that in a week. So I think making sure you got you know, Ty Clary, your starting center, in, and Colton Jackson, their left tackle. I'm not sure what his deal was, but making sure you got both those guys in your offensive line, I think, was pretty critical.
Yeah, I don't know that I've got a whole lot much to add. You know, after the Texas A&M game, Chad said that, you know, Nick was going to remain the starting quarterback, even though, you know, he missed the last 2+ quarters with an injury. It appears, you know, even last week when we got to watch Tuesday and Wednesday practice, he was out there. And, you know, but I think, gosh, maybe even Wednesday, you know, I think they said he may have been back to 100%, definitely in that range now. Don't foresee any reason that would keep him out of the game, other than something drastic happening in practice this week. But yeah, I think they also, last week was a pretty big deal for guys like Rakeem Boyd and Trey Knox and Mike Woods, the guys that Chad and the coaches are calling their high mileage guys, their high rep guys. Like, the first 5 weeks were a grind. Like, even though you did play Portland State and San Jose State, you played five games that came down to a fourth quarter, and that's, you know, that's lots of wear and tear on your body. Like, there's no second half where you can really rest your starter or multiple starters at all. So those guys grinded through the first 5 weeks plus fall camp. So that's basically 2 months straight going at it. So getting some guys back healthy was big. And then obviously another thing you can do in the bye week is get young guys work. And Chad said that, you know, guys like Malik Chavis and Jalen Catalan are, you know, got some pretty good reps. And John Chavis was even added that, you know, Zach Williams will probably be back. And, you know, even Eric Gregory, who we haven't seen, I don't think, to this point, he's at a point where he's probably not going to get much better before he starts playing. So I think those are the two biggest takeaways.
Yeah, and a guy that could come back for the Razorbacks is wide receiver Jordan Jones. He could be making his season debut. What does he bring to the table for the Razorbacks? We'll start with you, Bob.
Well, just pure speed. I mean, I think he's the fastest guy on the team. So he obviously gives you a deep threat. I mean, those freshmen, Trey Knox and Traylon Burks have been the go-to, become the go-to guys, and they're going to keep being the go-to guys. But Jones gives you a guy that can stretch the field. You know, you're not quite sure what kind of game shape he's going to be in, but he just gives you some speed.
Yeah, I think Bob made a good point. We don't know exactly what kind of game shape he's going to be in because he hasn't been, you know, probably in just a whole lot of live work since his injury. What was it, like in the first or the second scrimmage of the fall? Another thing I think it could do is maybe take a little bit of the load off of Mike Woods, because Mike, I think, you know, outside of Traylon Burks going deep on a couple of balls, maybe on those flag routes, Mike Woods has been the guy that Arkansas's targeted deep quite a bit, and you know that could take a little bit off of him. And maybe, you know, Joe Craddock said the other day that Mike Woods played 71 snaps against A&M. That's entirely too many. And maybe if you got a guy like Jordan Jones, who, you know, could, he's definitely got the ability to take the top off of defense and run by guys. Not the greatest route runner, I don't think, but definitely got plenty of speed. He could probably take a little bit of a load off Mike Woods too.
Jones's numbers went down last year in the first year of this system. But now that they have a quarterback who's a better downfield passer, perhaps, you know, you hit one or two of those in a game, just hit one of those in a game, some kind of 40-yard pass, you know, suddenly the safeties have to honor that when he's in the game. And then you can run him deep and get the safety to pull over there to that and run stuff behind the safety, you know, drag your tight end the other way. So he can give you some other extra components to your offense.
He is a part of a receiving core that has been banged up all season long. Knox and Burks haven't played in the same game since the Colorado State game. Will having both Knox and Burks in the offense and these other receivers all together, will it make it more explosive, Scotty?
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, I think anytime you've got you got all your playmakers and all of your weapons ready to go, I don't see why it wouldn't. It's defensive backs and defensive coaches in general are going to be paying a lot of attention to Knox and Burks because obviously you've seen through the first 5 weeks, although they haven't played all five games, that they're very capable of having big days. And what was it against? Who was it against? Was it Colorado State? Burks and Knox, I think, combined for almost 200 receiving yards and a touchdown. Those guys are big-time playmakers. And you throw Mike Woods in there, who I believe is the team's leading receiver now, Shine O'Grady. And you can go on down the list. This offense has weapons. I think it comes down to, you know, pre-snap alignments and making sure everybody's where they're supposed to be. Arkansas shot themselves in the foot in the fourth quarter at Texas A&M. I think they had 8 penalties for that entire game, and 5 came in the fourth quarter, and 4 were when the offense was on the field. And so you got to clean up some of those mistakes. And I think if they do, offense can be explosive.
Yeah, it gives you the potential to be more explosive, but they've got to execute cleaner to have explosive play. I mean, think back to the Ole Miss game. If Nick Starkle throws it to the right side, then maybe they get a touchdown pass maybe to C.J. O'Grady out of that. Maybe that changes the entire complexion of the rest of the course of that game. So I think they have to be better at running their end-arounds. T.J. Hammond's got a couple of shots at that. They weren't end-arounds. They were, I call them pop passes that go in front of the quarterback. I thought he should have cut up sooner on one of them, but Jordan Jones is a guy who maybe can cut up. Jared Cornelius used to do that to great effect for Arkansas, and I think they did it with the kid from Camden, Dominic Reed, a few years ago. They were really effective on those, and I think if you can start using those more effectively, it opens up other things in your offense.
What do you think, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, this is the healthiest they've been all season. I mean, they're not going to get Deion Stewart back. He's done for the year, but they haven't had Jones all year. And like I say, they haven't had the freshman in the same game. And then you had, O'Grady in there. He's a tight end, but he's kind of like a wide receiver in terms of what he can do route running wise and stretching the field. And so also these guys can stay fresher because they're not like Sky, so they're not going to have to run 70, 75 snaps a game. You like to probably keep that in, 45, 50 range or something. And we're not even talking about Tyson Morris, who's had a pretty good start to the season too.
Talking about what you were saying, Tom, about the mistakes, I'm going to pose this question to you. Do you expect those to be cleaned up coming off of a bye week?
Well, you don't know if they're going to be cleaned up, but I do think they probably repped it more and showed it to the guys more on film, and they should be better. I'm not going to say they're going to go mistake-free, but they should be better. And if you have one, illegal formation per game, that's not going to kill you. But if it comes on a drive when a critical time in a drive, it can really, really hurt you. So they've had a couple of those, it feels like, per game, and they need to cut that down to like 0.5 per game.
Yeah, and a couple of those penalties have just come at the absolute worst time. Like the beginning of the fourth quarter at A&M, you hit Treylon Burks on just a little slant, and he does something magical with the ball that I feel like only he can do.
Treylon Burks stuff.
Yeah, and he gets 50 yards, and then the Trey Knox or the penalty that wiped out Trey Knox's touchdown at Ole Miss, those are just coming at absolutely awful times.
Chavis was able to move up to the booth for the A&M game. Then he said in his press conference this week that he's probably going to stay up there. Did y'all see anything different from the defense with Chavis in the booth against A&M, Bob?
I guess I didn't chart all the plays. I just think he's more comfortable up there because at the end of his A&M tenure, he came down to the field because their defense was struggling. But he said before his first season at Arkansas, he prefers to be in the booth. And then last year, things were going so bad at Mississippi State, he came down. But the second half was even worse than the first half. And then they were really bad at Missouri. So I remember thinking, well, why is he staying on the field? It didn't seem to work very well. But so I don't know about this specific game. I just think he's been doing this a long time. And I think the majority of the time he's been upstairs. You obviously see the field better from up there. So I just think he likes it better up there.
What do you think, Scotty?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I know that was – I think Chavis going up to the booth was just – for the A&M game, I think was just trying to change some things up, just get a little bit away from what had gone on, maybe in the first 4 weeks. I think Arkansas's defense did play better against Texas A&M, and that could be Chavis being able to spot some things with that bird's eye view a little bit better than, obviously it's more difficult for me anyway to see things on the field when I'm, kind of at field, if I'm ever at field level. I don't really know. I think he said on Monday that, he's probably going to stay up there for a little while. So, probably a comfortability factor with him and just being able to see things and make adjustments on the fly, relay it down to the field.
I think if that's what he prefers, I would stick with that. And he clearly preferred it. So, to me, it's a matter of seeing and communicating and getting stuff onto the field quickest. And if they feel like that's the best way to do it, they should do it that way. And what that does is send Steve Caldwell back down to the field because he was in the booth. And there's a lot of young defensive ends that he's, he's their position coach. And he can communicate changes in the game to those younger guys better face-to-face. And then the same thing applies on the offensive side of the ball. Barry Lunning can communicate more with special teams guys, helping get personnel on the field and things like that. So he has gone down to the field as well.
According to Stoops, Sawyer Smith is expected to start at quarterback for the Wildcats. And in case you're confused, it started as Sawyer Smith being the backup quarterback for the Wildcats. And then now he is the starter due to injury. What do you see from the Razorbacks? What do you want to see from the Razorbacks defense against Smith? Scotty?
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be made available this week. He's listed as Kentucky starter. And Lynn Bowden, I think, was taking some Wildcat snaps at the end of their last game, I think, against South Carolina. I want to see Arkansas just see if they can recreate maybe what – who are the last two teams that Kentucky played? South Carolina
and Mississippi
and
State.
Mississippi State. Sawyer Smith completed, I think, about 36% of his passes in those two games. That is
yikes.
That is not good. So if you're an Arkansas fan or you're Arkansas's coaches, you don't want to see him have one of those bounce back games. And so you want to see Arkansas's DBs play with some physicality. And that, I mean, that's going to be tough because Lynn Bowden's one of the best do-it-all talents in the league. And then who is it? Ahmad Wagner for Kentucky, too. He's a 6'5 kid, former Iowa basketball player, who I think he's been targeted 33 times in his career, and he's drawn like 10 pass interference penalties on defensive backs. So Arkansas has got its work cut out for us. Those two guys are a mix of physical and very, very skilled. So Arkansas has got to be physical with those guys and try to limit big plays.
Yeah. When Sawyer Smith came in against Eastern Michigan, when Terry Wilson was hurt, 5 of 9, and then Florida, 23 of 35. So they had a really nice game plan for him against Florida. And if they'd made a field goal late in the game, probably would have won the game. Since then, it's almost like they schemed him up. They figured out what he liked the best, and their defenses have taken some things away. Like Scotty said, 36.6% against Mississippi State, 34.4% against South Carolina, averages out to what, about 35%. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think you'd rather see him in the game than Lynn Bowden. So I'm sure they're going to get a dose of both guys. But, man, if they can find a way to get a pass rush going like South Carolina did, they sacked him 4 times, that could be the key to, you know, finally winning a conference game and a road game.
Yeah, Arkansas, I thought, you know, they didn't do a good job at all getting pressure on the San Jose State quarterback, Josh Love. And but it seemed like they did a lot better job with that against A&M, Jamario Bell in particular, and that was his second game back. And you feel like, you know, with another week of practice, he's probably pretty much back to 100% back in game shape. So I think if they can put pressure on Smith, that'll be big because he's a guy – I'm not saying they shouldn't have tried to hurt him, but he's a guy who I think I've read has had shoulder, wrist, and ankle injuries. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that off week did him some good, but I'm sure he's not feeling real great. So if he's a guy who's having all these issues, you know, he's probably got some happy feedback there. I'm totally understandable. So, you know, I think if they can put some pressure on him, they can force some bad passes, maybe even some turnovers.
All right, guys. So kind of zooming out here, Arkansas, well, they haven't played Kentucky since 2012, a team led by John L. Smith, and they won't have another home game against the Wildcats until 2026. So this is our one opportunity for the Razorbacks to play a cross-division rival that's not permanent. Do you like the current format of how the SEC schedules cross-division games? We'll start with you, Tom.
Well, thanks for springing that on me.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't. And I saw somebody, I don't know where it was from, but some blogger or some online deal posted this thing about using pods. And the SEC is kind of, you know, a little bit staid and, you know, a little bit stoic in the way it, you know, Auburn does not want to get broken up from Georgia. Alabama doesn't want to get broken up from Tennessee and so on. But you know what? There's been changes. They added Arkansas and South Carolina in 92. They added Texas A&M and Missouri in 12. And right now, your cross-division opponents don't cycle back around near enough. I'm not an advocate of going to 9-game conference schedule like Nick Saban has advocated before. I don't think it's fair that LSU has to play Florida every year right now, and Alabama's playing Tennessee every year, and they're down, and it's an advantage. The year Mississippi State won the division in 98, you know, they play Kentucky every year. And there's some teams in the East that have been traditionally down. So I'm not in favor of it. I cannot describe to you what the pod thing looked like other than you had three annual opponents and then the other five rotated every year. So you would play one set of those five at home or, you know, one set of those five one year, the next set of those five the next year. And so any guy going through the school for 4 years would get to play those teams, you know, ostensibly twice. I like that a lot better, and I don't know what it will take to get to that. I used to think when Arkansas was really good with under Petrino about a decade ago, that it seemed to me like they were in this cycle of playing Georgia and Florida a lot, and those are the teams that are hard to beat. And South Carolina would sprinkle in, and it was a long time between Vanderbilt and Kentucky. And now you know, now they're not playing so well. Now they're playing Vanderbilt in Kentucky, and they lose at home to Vanderbilt last year. And Bob and I have had discussions about this. And he knows what it's like. And they have losing records against both Vandy and Kentucky.
Yeah, I always thought of myself as a traditionalist. You know, I grew up in Missouri and went to Missouri and covered the Big Eight. And, of course, the big game there was Nebraska-Oklahoma, which people nowadays might find hard to believe. That was basically like, you know, Michigan, Ohio State. You know, and of course not Texas, so it was a conference game, but, you know, Oklahoma and Nebraska haven't played now, I don't know how long, and I don't think anybody at this point really cares. Tennessee and Alabama, I got a feeling Tennessee probably wouldn't mind ending that rivalry. And you look at Auburn. Auburn's got to play Florida and Georgia this year from the East. Alabama gets Tennessee.
South Carolina,
yeah. So, you know, is that really a fair deal? I really wouldn't be opposed to just breaking up, you're not even having permanent teams on the other side. But, yeah, it's ridiculous that Arkansas plays Kentucky, you know, twice in 50 years or whatever it is. And but when Arkansas first got in the league, they had Tennessee as a permanent East team. And
South Carolina,
and then they'd rotate. They'd play, you know, Georgia, whoever, home and home. So, yeah, I think something needs to happen because it's just – you don't even feel like Arkansas and Kentucky have been in the same conference, you know, the last 10 years.
Yeah, I don't know that I've got much to add to that. I will add that it is weird. It is strange that we can go however many years before, you know, Arkansas goes to Vanderbilt or Arkansas goes to Kentucky or both of those teams come to Arkansas or Arkansas goes to South Carolina, whoever.
It's a 14 Florida, years Georgia between home.
Yeah, it's definitely strange. But I'm kind of looking forward to the trip to Kentucky this year. So I don't know, maybe I'm a little indifferent.
I wish I could cite the blogger to you guys. I don't know if you've seen it, but the Arkansas's annual opponents in this deal were Ole Miss, A&M, and Missouri. So they play them every year. And then you'd have two at home, one away, and then swap it out. And then the other five, they were split up pretty evenly. And then you'd play five of them and then switch those five over. And it just feels like more of a realistic. There it is. Jason Kirk.
Yeah, Banner Society is Jason Kirk. Some of the former SB Nation guys put all that together.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's worth a look if you want to go online and check that out.
It seems like almost anything would be a better system than what the SEC is currently using. All right, guys, as we wrap this up on this Whole Hog Football podcast, we're about halfway through the season. Game 6 coming up for the Razorbacks against Kentucky. So we'll start with you, Bob. Who is your first half MVP?
Oh, first half of the season?
Yes.
Okay. I thought you meant like, who do I think is going to have the great first half at Kentucky? man, I guess probably Rakeem Boyd, just because he's been, you know, consistent on offensively. He's been a guy they could count on. He's gotten a lot of tough yards. So if you're talking about just one guy, I'd say probably Rakeem Boyd, at least on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, it would probably be tough to go against Rakeem. He's been pretty consistent on the ground. You know, I think outside of maybe that Ole Miss game where he didn't really run for much yardage, maybe 60 or so yards. But Arkansas that night didn't run the ball well at all. So it's hard to go against him. And, you know, against Texas A&M, he had a couple of big runs. And, you know, it didn't hit me that he had the day that he did, but he finished, I guess, with 90-plus yards, which is pretty impressive. Against a run defense that wasn't giving up just a whole lot coming into the game. Tough to go against him. I might go with, you know, Cheyenne O'Grady. He's been pretty good. And, you know, maybe outside of you know, battling some injuries and maybe some off the field things, he's been really good, and he's been one of Arkansas's go-to weapons on offense.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against Boyd. He ranks 25th in the country in rushing, which, and I'm didn't notice that until today. I mean, I knew he was doing okay, but he's 96 yards a game, I think. I would put a vote in for Cam Curl. He's having a really good year. He's grading out well pretty much each week. He missed a tackle in the Ole Miss game on one of those touchdowns. He got juked, but that's really about the only super glaring, you know, physical mistake that you've seen him make. And we're talking to Ron Cooper last week. And by the way, Chad Morris, if you happen to be listening to this, having your assistance available has been very productive, and I think they like it too. You know, Jeff Traylor wasn't in the best of moods, but gosh, it's almost cathartic when those guys get to come in and talk to us. They get to put their ideas and beliefs out there. But Cam Curl's had a good season, and he'd be the defensive MVP. And, you know, hey, throw Connor Limpert in there too. I know he's 8 of 10. He missed one big field goal in the A&M game, but he's had a good season as well.
And then – hate to end it like this, guys, but somebody that you thought would have a better first half than they've had so far. What do you think?
I think Sosa Gimes played okay, and maybe he's getting a lot of double teams and things, but I guess I thought he'd make some more plays. Maybe that's not being fair to him because I think he's had a good first five games, but I thought he would be all-SEC caliber, and I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. After the San Jose State game and leading into Texas A&M, I think Sosa came into the interview room, and I noticed before we were doing some final checks on stats before we walked into the interview room, and I noticed he only had one tackle against San Jose State. And so I asked him, I said, Sosa, do you remember the last time you had one tackle in a game, like only one tackle in a game? He was like, yeah, a couple weeks ago. And so, like, I didn't go back and fact check, but the fact that he said that's, I don't know, that's a little, it kind of caught me off guard a little bit, because I kind of expected him to, like, he knows this is a, you know, it's kind of equates to a contract here for him. Like, NFL scouts are looking at him like, can you play the nose tackle? Can you create a pass rush? Can you stop the run and play over the center? That kind of thing. And so, I mean, he needs to have a much better second half of the year.
Yeah, I'm just kind of scanning through the positions, and look, I know Scooter Harris had the, you know, fumble return for a touchdown, but he even said himself a couple of weeks ago that even though he's graded out well, he thinks he should be having a better year. So I think both he and Poole at the linebacker could be a little bit more forceful, make more tackles in the hole, make more TFLs. But I mean, they're not having bad years by any means, but those two and a game, just guys that you were team leaders going into the season, I'd say. And then, you know, Joe Fouché is a first year starter, but I think his, biting up on that fake toss on the first play against San Jose State was kind of like a mood setter, and it got San Jose State confident, and they ended up having a bunch of big plays in that game. So those are all the defensive guys. And, you know, offensively, I don't know. I think their O-linemen have had to play a little bit too much. And so I wouldn't single anybody out there. I'd go with the defensive guys more.
Yeah, and going back to Scooter a little bit, there was a play in the Texas A&M game where it was just him and Kellamond kind of in the open field, and he totally whiffed on that play. And you wish for him that he would make that play and make a few more impact plays, like the scoop and score for the touchdown in the second quarter was pretty big. But Gabe Richardson and who's Isaiah Spiller at A&M, they kind of gifted him that in a way. So just want to see him make maybe a few more impact plays and have some games, you know, where he gets up in the 12 to 15 tackle range.
All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's Bob Holt, Scotty Bordelon, and Tom Murphy on the Whole Hog Sports Football Podcast. Making sure to tune in and read all of their stuff on wholehogsports.com. They'll get you ready for game this week on Saturday against Kentucky. The Whole Hog Sports Football Podcast is produced and edited for Airship by me, Seth Campbell. Special shout-outs to Mark Story, Tom Murphy, Bob Holt, and Scotty Bordelon. You can read more from Mark Story on the Lexington Herald Leader's website, kentucky.com. You can read more from Scotty, Tom, and Bob on wholehogsports.com. Thank you to our sponsor, Massage Envy. By supporting them, you are supporting us. Don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast. Subscribing and sharing is one of the best ways to let your friends know about this podcast and for us to grow. Theme music is by Silent Partners. I'm Seth Campbell for Whole Hog Sports. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you back here next week.